Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gear Priority Podcast. My name is Justin, and today I am joined by Carl, the man behind what Backpacking Magazine calls the best backpacking podcast currently running. We both recently got back from the Outdoor Retailer Show, where we got to see a bunch of gear that brands are announcing for next year, as well as a bunch of gear brands we have never heard of. Today, we're going to go over some gear trends we saw at OR, and then what pieces of gear we are most excited about. Welcome, Carl. For people who may not be familiar with the best backpacking podcast currently running, who are you?
Who am I? Thanks. Hey, Justin. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. I really don't know what I'm doing here. I'll be completely honest. You're so intelligent with gear. You got spreadsheets with decimal points. I think you've memorized pi. I just feel it's an honor for me to be here. So thanks for having me on the show. I'm Carl, one of the hosts from Backpacking Blisters podcast. And yeah, we've been honored by Backpacking Magazine. They've kind of connected with our show, and they're not a real magazine, but we'll take any accolades that we can get, even if they're fake. But yeah, we've been running for 5 or so years now, 6 years, I guess. And we're just tips and tales with a sense of humor. And some of our best episodes have been with Justin Outdoors on our show. So appreciate you having me on.
You guys are a lot of fun. So if people like a fun podcast to check out, then definitely go check out Backpacking Blisters. I'm pretty excited for this episode because we were both at Outdoor Retailer a couple weeks ago, wandering the floor, checking out the booths and the gear and everything that was out there. You even had some of the people onto your podcast that you're interviewing and chatting to. So I'm curious to hear a bit about that, the different characters and everything, as well as I think we have a, based on our chats before, I think we have a kind of a different eye for gear and what we're looking for as far as what's interesting. So that'll be fun to go over. But before we get into all that, we'll start off with some rapid fire questions just to get to know you a little bit better. So let's start off with, what are your favorite two outdoor activities?
Favorite two, definitely backpacking, obviously, but I'm a trail runner as well. So yeah, I love hitting the trails and going fast. My body can manage that. Hey, you're just throwing rapid fire questions. Has anybody thrown these back at you? Have you answered these questions, Justin?
No. I just kind of roll through them.
Let's go back and forth. All right, Justin, what are your two favorite outdoor activities?
My favorite two, probably backpacking and then skiing, but more particularly like backcountry skiing, like ski touring, where you're skidding up the mountain and then skiing down and not using lifts. So that's self propelled. Yeah, those are my two favorite. Okay. Question number two, biggest fear related to backpacking?
Fear related to backpacking. That's a great one. This is not rapid fire. I got to process through this here. I don't have a lot of fears when I'm out there. I have a bad sense of confidence, especially around wild animals. But I guess if there's one, it would be that somebody else got hurt on the trip and I didn't know what to do. And, you're kind of forced to make a decision in crisis. And my concern would be that I would make the wrong decision. So that'd be my biggest fear. How about you?
That's a good one. Yeah, I think that the easy answer for me would be wildlife. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, being charged by a grizzly bear. People are probably familiar with that story, but I think what comes up more often is related to yours is when I'm going with other people, because most of the time I'm going solo, but because of the amount of experience I have, I'm usually looked at as the person who's leading a trip and things like that. But I'm not as experienced with kind of seeing what someone's capabilities are and then matching the trip to them. So it's something that I'm constantly working on. But one of my fears is taking someone past their abilities and putting them into a situation that they're really uncomfortable in, then they have a bad time and then maybe aren't as into backpacking. Because one of my favorite things is getting people backpacking and having fun backpacking. That's the whole point is people being more confident and comfortable in their outdoor adventures. So it's
right.
That's my biggest fear is doing something that would counter that.
That's tough, because I've learned just from having the podcast, we've taken some groups out backpacking, quite a few groups. My estimate is 80% of the people either don't know their own capabilities or they misrepresent themselves. They think they can do way more than they can, or they think they're way more experienced than they are. And so I get people out there. We had somebody who's 13 miles. I've done this trail before. I can do this 13-mile trail up in Grand Teton National Park. And by mile 7, it was like complete stop. So yeah, that's a tough one for sure.
Yeah. All right. Number 3, what's your go-to backpack?
See, right now I got the Granite Gear Blaze 60. So I'm always swapping out packs and trying to find, that's kind of like a medium weight one. It's not like ultralight. It's not super heavy. So it's kind of where I'm at right now. I have like an old Go Light pack, and I'll use that for kind of if I'm going like really lightweight, but it's not as comfortable. So,
okay.
You got a trip coming up here at the end of July. What are you bringing on that trip?
Yeah, trip with you and 8 other guys. I think I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to bring on that trip yet, but I'm going to go one of two ways. I'm either going to go extremely heavy for weight, and I have a Kelty pack that's rated to 70 pounds. So I might load that up with like 50, 60 pounds and try to just keep up with everyone.
Wait, why are you doing that? Why would you do that?
Just for fun.
Like for exercise, like this trip's easy, so I'm just going to kind of get the extra calories burned.
I've never carried over 40 pounds over 40 pounds probably during the like 3-season backpacking.
Okay.
And never over 50 pounds. So I just want to kind of put myself into the shoes of someone who might be carrying that much weight. Cause I know that's a common weight for some people that I know who are going on their first trip. They're packing a lot of stuff. So just want to be able to relate to that experience.
That is interesting. We got a guy on our trip who he's been backpacking forever, and he has a problem where he just chucks stuff as his pack. But he's getting older now, so I told him straight up. I said, if your pack is stinking over 50 pounds at the trailhead, I'm gonna start yanking things out of your pack. So he's been warned, but I can't do that with you because this is our first trip together.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and it'll be on purpose. I'll just be chugging along. I've been doing my running, so hopefully it won't be a problem from a fitness standpoint.
Yeah, running and carrying 50 pounds, the same thing.
Yeah. last one. This is going into the stats for the podcast.
Okay.
Toilet paper, bidet, or doing the Lloyd from Garage Room Gear method and using rocks and sticks.
I'm a toilet paper person, and I've done the bidet. I've done like sticks and rocks are weird. I've done like, you find the right plants to use, and I've definitely done that too. But I know you've got like a pretty strong opinion on the bathroom stuff, and you've got your own setup. I don't know that I want you to answer this question, because this is going to get gross on us.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. Go for it. What you got?
Bidet for sure. And then, and I think I'm gonna reiterate it, because a lot of people just think you spray water at butthole, but you got to get in there with the other hand with soap and water, clean things up, wash your hands after, then use some hand sanitizer. Everything's nice and clean and really reduces the chafing. That's the biggest thing, the chafing and just feeling like generally gross due to having like poo smeared on your butt. Like that's, yeah.
Fair enough.
5 days of smear definitely adds up.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna leave it at that.
All right. Let's jump into talking about outdoor retail. Let's move on from, I could talk about poop all day. So let's jump into the topic of the podcast, what people are here for. I think you've been to a few outdoor retailer shows, right? How many have you been to?
So I've been to three, I've been to three summer ones and one winter one, I guess. They call it like the snow show. Actually, Tayson from Outdoor Vitals is the one. He's like, he used to be in Denver. He's like, you should go to this. Like, why aren't you going to this? It's just up the road from you. And so I was like, I don't know. And so that's kind of how it started to, I guess, yeah, check it out.
Okay, nice. And for the people who don't know what outdoor retailer is, it's probably not something that most people out there are familiar with. Can you just give us a rundown on what the show is? It's a lot, but maybe just from your perspective.
Well, I'll share mine. I'm curious if you have a different perspective. I just feel like it's just a big networking show. It's not open to the public, and it's just simply a bunch of companies that are there like presenting at booths. But then there's also, people that are there that are just kind of walking the show. There's people that are trying to sell products. There's people that are trying to get their product licensed by these companies. So they'll actually bring products and kind of show them what they've got. And then there's obviously media there.
such as yourself, you know, trying to kind of get info on what's coming out. And then it's just like a big networking show. It's, you know, companies that are looking for, you know, sourcing new materials. There's collaborations. It's like, I don't know, like everything is going on all at once. And so you walk up to a booth and people have to identify like who you are and kind of what your motivation is. That's kind of my take on it. What's your take?
Yeah. And whether they care about you, like there's definitely some people who are there in order to only talk to retailers, in order to have retailers make purchase orders for their whatever product that they have at their booth.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this entire, I don't know if you went to this, the entire other section, because we were hanging out mostly where it was like manufacturers up here who had like products and things that they would, you'd see in like REI and places like that. There's an entire other section that was like zippers and buckles and materials and all these different like components that then the manufacturers will go and purchase or to put into like a pack or a tent or something like that. Did you head over into that section at all?
We do, but I don't really know what I'm doing over there. Like I'll look at different materials and things, but I'm not like, yeah, would it, I don't know.
It was an interesting spot. I have some thoughts on it a little bit later for some of our future topics, but yeah, that was an interesting spot. And I think you kind of nailed it. It's a networking thing that's trying to do a lot. And I think for us and our perspective, it's probably the coolest thing I think is seeing kind of the new gears as well as meeting people. This is the first time you and I met in person. It was a lot of fun. Same with Steven from My Life Outdoors. He was there. Lloyd from Garage Run Gear. So it was kind of cool to kind of meet everyone in person for the first time and chat with some of these brands face to face as well. So that was a fun part for me.
Yeah, and it was my first time actually seeing some like, you know, like big time YouTubers there, such as you and Steven. Like I had just kind of walked in the show before. I hadn't run into anybody before. So yeah, I'm really curious. It sounds like you had a pretty positive experience. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. Is this something you would go back to?
I think so. Yeah, it was good. I'd like to see more brands, bigger brands there. Like we had some really interesting brands, but we were missing some of like the bigger brands like REI, Osprey, Patagonia, most of them. So it was interesting to see like some of the smaller brands that were at the show as well. So I could be more worthwhile to go if the bigger brands were there. I think everyone's missing out by them not being there. So hopefully that can get figured out down the road. And I think more coverage from like YouTube and stuff like that would be great to see. Cause I love I would always search before coming to the show, I'd always search after the show, like outdoor retailer, like gear announcements. And usually it was like three websites max that had coverage on the show as far as like what their favorite gear was. And most of the time it wasn't backpacking specific. So you'd have like Gear Junkie talking about like a bunch of overlanding gear and like rooftop tents and 50 million amp power battery banks and stuff like that.
A lot of batteries for sure.
So yeah, it'd be nice. I think it's good to kind of have these conversations, and hopefully outdoor retailer sees the benefit of people like us going to the show and maybe can make it a little bit easier for media to cover it down the road. But I think that kind of leads us into some trends that I want to talk about, some trends that we saw at outdoor retailer, because the first one for me is definitely the battery banks. I saw a lot of battery banks at the show for overlanding and different things like that. What are some trends that you saw?
Yeah, well, the battery banks for sure. Like Coleman had their own like whole separate booth area specifically for batteries, which you don't usually associate Coleman and batteries, but I guess we're supposed to now. Yeah, as far as trends, let me think about this for a second. Yeah, like I don't know if this is new, but I've noticed a trend where there's a lot of new companies that are going kind of all in on nutrition, whether it's drink mixes, supplements, whatever. So there's that. I feel like every time I go, there's at least two to three new companies who are making freeze-dried food. So they're like, hey, if you like, you know, if you've been eating Mountain House, check out this. And sometimes the food is actually worse than Mountain House, which is weird because like you figure that'd be hard to do. But I like some of Mountain House's stuff, but a lot. So there's like more freeze-dried stuff. There's multiple freeze-dried companies. Two kind of had already been around. There's definitely one new one that called Wild Society. So that was one. And then one trend that was kind of on the down low, but I've noticed just from having people on my podcast and then just from chatting with some different companies, is that there's this new trend of like collaborations where two companies are going to go in on one product and you're going to see their branding, like both of their brands or their logos on that product. So those are the kind of the big three that I took away.
Yeah, I didn't notice the collaboration aspect, but you're right, especially with some of the, like, I think some of the lifestyle brands and stuff on that side of the show, there's a bit of that. And then we saw the Enlightened Equipment and Evolved Supply Co. collaboration for the Outcast jacket that they had there, were showing off. I think that's getting an opening for pre-order on July 20th. I think Enlightened Equipment was saying, so that's interesting.
But yeah, and I don't want to name names. I don't know if this is like appropriate, but there was one company that was basically like blown away. I was trying to get the guy to come over and do an interview with me, and he's like, "Sorry, my mind just blown. I had this other big company come up to me and say, hey, let's do a collaboration where like they're in more of the hunting realm and they want to use some of our gear to kind of, basically just do the crossover essentially." And so there's companies that are actively seeking it out, sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel free to name names as long as it's not, as long as I guess they didn't tell you like, hey, don't.
Well, it's not certain yet. And we're working with this company, so I don't want to burn my bridge there, so I'll just leave it at that.
Were there any companies that you went up and talked to, and they're like we'll talk about this with you, but like you got to keep it on the hush hush, like this is, because there's a lot of announcements and people talking about gear that's coming out like in next year, even further down the road. Anyone kind of swear you to secrecy?
No, I mean I don't think they. We found out, like from Peak Refuel, that they have some new flavors coming out. Like I think they're more like hunting. They're kind of going more in the hunting market, to be honest. Since they have kind of like big game, like you know whatever it's going to be, like elk casserole or I don't know what it is. But so they told us that they didn't say to keep it on the down low, but it's not out yet. And then they said that they're coming. I think they said they're coming out with a new flavor in August, but they wouldn't tell us what it was. And then Jet Boil was like, "We have something coming out," and I was like, "Great! Like what?" You know, like, can you give us like a category? Is it a stove? Shocker, but they wouldn't tell me that. Like, did you get some secrets?
Jetboil wouldn't even talk to me. I went up and stood outside their, like, stood by their booth and like tried to make eye contact with someone, and like they're just ignoring. I don't know what they're like. They talked to Steven from My Life Outdoors, but he's a bit of a bigger deal than I'm. That was actually a trend that I encountered. Was Steve and I would walk up to someone, they'd be like, "Oh, hey, Steven, how's it going? Love your channel." And I'd just be like kind of standing there. One guy was even like, "I watch a ton of YouTube and your channel is one of my favorite." I'm like, "You watch a ton of YouTube and you don't even recognize me." That cuts deep.
I know. Although, yeah, but he does have a bigger beard, so he kind of pops more. Maybe grow, you know, like a belly length beard, and he'll have a more recognizable face.
By next year I'll have the My Life Outdoors beard.
That's right. That's so funny. But didn't that happen like the opposite of what you're saying? I think happened with Garmin, right? Where Garmin was like all in on you, and they were just trying to shoo Steven out of the booth. Isn't that what happened there?
Yeah, Garmin and I, yeah, we have a good relationship. And then, but I think part of it was Steven walked up to the booth and they're like, and he's like, kind of just open up with, "I don't wear a watch and I don't like watches."
And I hate your company.
Yeah. So I think they're kind of like, "Oh, okay. Like, probably not worth talking to you."
Right. Right. I had a different experience with Garmin. This will go later on in the discussion, but I had a very different experience with Garmin than both of you guys, to be honest. So
nice. Curious to hear about that. I think there's one other trend I wanted to mention on my side where, It was brands bringing reps who did not know about their product in depth. And I don't know if this is like just because it's hard to kind of memorize all the information, or they're just not bringing the right information to the show. But like I get pretty technical with gear, and I like to get into the nitty gritty. But like I'd go up to someone and be like, "Do you know what the stack height of this shoe is?" Or like what the material of the midsole and questions like that, or like what's how like thick is the titanium on your mug. And I like what I was saying was pretty basic questions. If like if you're making a titanium mug, you should probably know how thick the titanium is. But like a lot of companies just like not really knowing about their product, which is kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think, well, it depends on which companies you're talking about, but there's definitely some people that are there for different purposes. And so they'll have, you know, I think I was asking about jackets last year, and I was like, you know, they had kind of more like the around town or the sporty looking jackets, but they had one model that was specific to backpacking, like a waterproof jacket. And so I was like, hey, tell me about this. Tell me about all your specs. And they're like, I don't know. Let me bring over this other guy. And then this other person knew everything. So I think it's all about who you talk to. I did make that mistake. Year one, Sawyer was there, and I had some very specific questions for Sawyer. So I like some of Sawyer's stuff a lot, and I hate some of Sawyer's stuff. And one thing that I hate that surprised me that they still make is the snake bite kit, because it's like been proven, I think, for decades now that it doesn't do anything, but it could possibly make a snake bite worse. It could actually like infect your wound. And so I was like, I want to know why you guys still make this, because this is crazy. And so I was trying to find, I was like, hey, would somebody be willing to interview? And they're like, hey, well, let's just send this like kind of fresh new person to our company to go talk about this. And she was so nice. And I was like, I can't sit here and challenge her when she doesn't really know what she's talking about. So I just learned early on that if you're talking to the wrong person, you have to find the right person to talk to, and maybe even identify yourself. Sometimes they don't really know what your motivation or what your purpose is too. So I don't know. It's kind of a learning curve. At least that's what I experienced.
Yeah, that's definitely something that kind of, I had that realization over the course of the show. Like, went from just being like, hey, I'd walk into the booth, hey, like tell me about your product, and kind of transition to, hey, I have a YouTube channel about hiking and backpacking. I have some technical questions about your product. Can you answer them, or is there someone else?
A better way to do it also would be to go up to the booth and be like, hey, do you know who I am?
I'm the guy sitting next to My Life Outdoors.
I'm the guy you should ignore because Steven's got a beard.
Yeah. On almost 300,000 subscribers instead of,
that's right,
70,000.
That's so funny.
He got a lot of recognition at the show. People were, and it was actually interesting walking around the show with him, because I was kind of like hyping him up to everyone. So it was kind of like advocacy for non-traditional media, because you have like the magazines, and you have like Outside Magazine and Gear Junkie and those kind of bigger traditional media outlets who are there, and the brands probably kind of bend over for, but is that a weird term? I don't know. But then I'd bring Steven over and be like, this guy gets like as many views as like Gear Junkie gets per month, kind of thing. And then that'd kind of like bring it into perspective for them. They'd talk to us a little bit more.
But you think that magazine companies are still getting a lot of like respect and credibility?
Yeah, yeah.
Like hard copy magazines at this point. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I they're still getting advertising dollars, and people are still kind of want. And I think it's kind of like they're also interested in the magazine's online presence. Like Gear Junkie doesn't have like a print aspect, but they're kind of, I now consider them more of like a traditional media source with their like online.
Yeah, that makes more sense. But just the hard copy magazines, I don't know. I just know that subscriptions are tanking, especially with like Backpacker Magazine, for example. And to me, I think it's, yeah, the advertising dollars they're getting are from companies that are just not as aware of where they should be spending their marketing dollars, in my opinion. So it's interesting that I feel like that's like staying strong.
Yeah, like the companies I've talked to, like I think a lot of them want that like Editor's Choice Award or like something like that from one of these outlets, but based on some conversations I've had, like that's like a minimal benefit. And it, like from an advertising standpoint, like some of these brands are seeing like 10x returns with less traditional media, like having people on Instagram or YouTube talk about their products or podcasts. Like I know you, like it's you can get some good reach because you have that connection built.
Yeah, it's more like, it's more brand awareness. I guess, oh, we could do like an Editor's Choice Awards, I guess. I don't know. But not being, you know, like as gear expert-ish as you are, I don't know how much credibility we'd have for that. But that could be something. That could be a thing for sure. There you go. You just gave me an idea. Okay, I'm going to mark that down. Episode idea. Thank you.
No problem.
That's so funny.
I want to talk about the gear that we saw and some of our favorite pieces of gear from the show. Because there were, even though there weren't some of the bigger brands out there, I definitely saw some pretty cool stuff on the show floor. I'd like to probably go over to like at least three different pieces of gear. Let's start off with your first one. One of your favorite pieces of gear that you saw on the show.
Okay, and I'll, in full disclosure, there wasn't a, like, I was actually pretty disappointed with, you know, what was new or what was, you know, I'm looking for the new stuff, and I'm really hoping that you found some things I didn't find, because I wasn't like super thrilled with what I found. I like some of the things, but the number one thing would be, did you visit Grand Trunk, that company?
I didn't, know.
Okay. So as you walk by their booth, they just have like a bunch of like lounging chairs out. So it wouldn't be something you'd think, oh, this is for backpacking, right? But they actually do make backpacking chairs, and they had different styles of chairs, which are kind of cool. They made one chair though, which was very low to the ground. And so for older people such as myself, like getting down there, like once you're getting down there, you're staying down there. Like it's just, you know, like you're just kind of be at that point, you're lounging. But it was super comfortable. So, and you know, these chairs are kind of in the 1 to 1.5 pound range. But what impressed my partner who's with me, he's a hammock guy, and I'm not, but he's like, what they're offering for hammocks is a really good deal. And so we're going to test this out, and I'll get back to you whether this is, you know, like the quality and all that stuff. But they're offering something called an Evolution 20-degree down hammock setup. So it's like not just the hammock itself, it's the full setup. So it's an 11-foot hammock, so you can fully stretch out. It includes the hammock itself, the quilt, and the underquilt. And they're selling the whole setup for $250 US. It weighs in at 4.2 pounds. So it's very competitive weight-wise and price-wise. The only issue is, like, it's not something you can kind of, like, mix and match and switch out, because I think they sew the quilt into the hammock. So it's not customizable. But that's my number one. What's your number one?
That's interesting. That's an insane price, I feel like. $250 for top quilt, under quilt, and hammock. Like you'd pay that just for a lot of hammocks or just for the top quilt, I think. I don't really know much about hammocks, but that seems like a very good deal.
I think, yeah, and I didn't write this down, but I think it was like $650 downfill, so it wasn't like you're not going to get the premium stuff for that, but yeah, it was a good deal, and yeah, good price points, but especially if you're just like, you know, trying to get into hammocks, and you're like, okay, I don't want to like figure out which of these three pieces to buy. They, you know, kind of an easy way to get in.
Yeah, and 4 to 5 pounds for the whole setup is pretty good. If you can,
right,
like you'll be able to get around that 10 pound mark with that kind of setup and get down to 20 degrees. So that's great.
Yeah,
that's really cool. That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't check them out, but that's good start. Good start to the list.
I don't know if I'm gonna sustain that, but I'll see what happens here.
I think I had one from a company called SolarCore, and they're working with. They didn't have like a specific product, but they had like a technology that they're showcasing that they wanted companies to build into their products. And it was an aerogel infused foam. And its kind of claim to fame is that it resists cold coming through due to compression. So if you like put your hand on and compress it a little bit, you wouldn't feel the cold coming up through it. They had a cold plate at their booth that they're showcasing this with, whereas like a piece of neoprene or EVA foam, you could feel the cold coming up through it as you kind of compress it down. And as a Canadian up here in the cold, like the thing that I've found the hardest to keep warm in the wintertime is my feet, because you compress the foam on the bottom of your winter booties, and unless you have something very heavy, it's going to be your foot's going to get cold. So this is a very, very light foam insulation that is also very effective. So I'm curious, I'd love for like Mountain Equipment Company up here, they have an expedition, but I'd love for them to like incorporate it in, or I might even reach out to them and see if they'll just send me like some foam blocks, then I can just cut it myself and then place it in kind of like an insole into my boot.
So they're more like a, you know, like a supplier for a company who wants to use their technology, incorporate it into like a new model of something. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. But
That was some of the cool stuff that I saw was more of these technology things than the actual product.
Okay. That's interesting. And that's the back corner area you're talking about. That's where you were kind of checking things out.
This one was near Peak Refuel on this side. The next item I'm going to talk about is from the back corner.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you have any other ones?
So, I mean, you're using the word gear, but, like, I assume that we're talking about, like, you know, like, outside companies, like food. Like, can I talk food here?
Totally.
Okay. So, I mentioned the freeze-dried thing. So, there's a company called Wild Society, and I think it's, like, Wild Society. I think, like, if you were to search them up online, it'd be, like, Wild Society Coffee. They make two things. They make kind of like a Starbucks Via type, like, you know, just pour, you know, just kind of rip it off, pour it in, and make a coffee drink. I'm not a coffee drinker, but the guy I was with is and said it was pretty good. But their claim to fame is in terms of like freeze dried food is that they make they have like a 2 Michelin star chef make their food. They hired like best of the best. And if you know anything about chefs, like that's a really big deal. And so what they do differently is they, like, I guess other companies such as Peak Refuel, they're going to drop all the freeze-dried ingredients into the bag. And so the ingredients don't, like, go together until you pour your hot water in the bag, and that's when kind of, like, all the flavors go together and it makes whatever the meal is. They freeze-dry the meal after it's been cooked together. And so you have the chef and you have, like, a different style of cooking it. And so if you're just looking to kind of mix things up, then this might be something to try out. One issue with most freeze-dried food companies is that a lot of them don't pack in enough calories for, you know, like if you're doing a big day. And so a lot of people want like more than 700 calories, for example. So I think that's still an issue with this company. I think there's mainly in like the 700, 800 range. So.
Yeah, I think that's what I was seeing from 700, 800. Did you have a chance to try out any of their meals?
So I tried, they had like a beef stroganoff, which is like not my favorite.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'm the best taste tester for this. So we tried that out. They gave me a sample and I brought it on a recent backpacking trip. And it was good. It would definitely taste a different thing than your typical beef stroganoff. It tasted more like real food to me. But I'm just not a beef stroganoff guy. I don't know. Did you test anything out?
Yeah, they sent me home with a couple of different ones. The steak fajita and then chicken vodka one, like pasta a la vodka. Yeah. And I tried with the fajita one and it was okay. Like I could have used a little bit more flavor, like more kick to it. Steven also had one that he tried on the trip we went on right after Outdoor Retailer. And he said that it was pretty good. So I'm curious to try with their other one. My favorite thing about them was their packaging was very compact. Like you have other brands where you have a ton of air and there's just excess packaging, it seems, all over the place. I like that their packaging was like a medium-sized freezer bag and there's like no excess air. So it was very compact that you could package it really easily and not have a bunch of extra packaging everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. But if you're talking like this food is just okay with a 2 Michelin star chef, I don't know. There's got to be something in the process going on. So yeah. Maybe they're still refining it.
I'm curious to see their other test out their other products. I feel like like a cheesy pasta is probably a little bit easier to get good. Like fajita seemed like a tough one.
That can be true for sure. What's your all time favorite freeze dried food meal?
I think it has to be. There's two. There's Peak Refuel pesto pasta is always solid. I love the cheesiness. One that had surprised me recently was Alpen Air had like a carnitas one that was like blew my mind. It had like a green chili kind of flavoring in it and like pulled pork. It's very good. I'd written off Alpen Air as being pretty gross in the past.
Yeah, 100%, man, 100%.
They released a couple new meals without any like fanfare or anything, and they're really good. They still are mixed in with their old meals. So like right now, their packaging's the same, so I don't know whether it's a new meal or old meal. So I bought like 8 of them, and I'll pull one out and be like, oh, hopefully this is one of their new ones. But
man, you're better than me because I won't even look at them. I mean they've been around since I've been backpacking for years and years, and I can't do Alpine Air. But kudos to you for being willing to try one of their new ones.
They're so cheap relative to some other ones. So I was like, yeah, I gotta pick them up. Yeah, until I'm making the big My Life Outdoors bucks, gotta be looking for the meal sales out there. Second one, it's another technology. I do have a couple gear items. They weren't necessarily on the show floor. It was kind of just like a whisper in my ear from a company about products that are gonna be coming out down the road. But this one is from Duraflex, and it was more of a line of kind of pieces of equipment that you'd find in backpacks, like buckles and clasps and things like that. When I went up to the booth and talked to them, I wanted to like take video and ask them like some questions, but they kind of just like shushed me and kind of made me move away because they're like, this is all trade secret stuff. Like you can't look at it or like take video of it, and we can't tell you about it. It's only for like people who are looking to buy, which was kind of, I found that kind of strange because I was looking over at like their competition just like across the way. And I was like, well, they could just walk over and just like look at all the stuff that you have here. I don't know what the big secret is.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I can give you a little bit of insight. Maybe that I did a very good job like keeping it a secret, but like there were some rumblings at the show and I was talking to some different folks, and I guess there are some relatively big companies that are just simply known for just ripping off ideas for other companies. So I'll tell you one, Skechers, I guess, is known for that. Skechers is known for being sketchy. And so one of the guys I talked to was not, he didn't have a booth, but he was around, that he was walking around the show showing some of his inventions, trying to get a licensing deal. So for example, he had like a knife that was made of carbon fiber, except for the tip. The blade tip was metal. And so it was like a full fixed blade knife, like really long, but it weighed, I don't know, an ounce or less. And I was like, dude, and it was super strong. So I was really impressed by it. Anyway, so he said that in order, like he was willing to show that to me, but for most companies, in order for him to show them what he's got, they have to sign like a non-disclosure agreement. So there's like this protective sense of like, hey, I don't know, like I'm trying not to share too much. I'll just give you one story. So like I know you visited the Soto Stowe's booth, right? Okay. So I don't know if you noticed, but like one of the Soto Stowe's looks very similar to like the MSR Pocket Rocket 2 in terms of like the fuel efficiency design. Like one of the companies designed it, one did not, basically is what it boils down to. So that, I don't know. So that's where that comes from, I guess. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I think like some of these things, like I actually, copying is an interesting, I think I'll have to do an entire episode about like copying and things like that. Cause as a consumer, I love when companies just copy and improve on each other and build off it. And,
oh yeah, improvement's great, right? Yeah.
Yeah. As a brand, I could see how that'd be frustrating. But I think that's where like patents come into play as well. Like hopefully, if people do have a good idea, they're actually taking the time to at least get a patent pending until they like see if it's like feasible economically down the road. Because like a patent pending, I think it's only like $200. To do an application for patent pending, and that gets you like 3 years, I think, of patent protection. I think there is some copying that happens out there, and it would be frustrating if you put a lot of effort into it as a brand, and then someone just comes along at outdoor retailer, sees the idea, and then a year later has the exact same product.
Well, and then speaking to that, yeah. So I guess I don't know how patents work, but I know that like Jetboil, their fin technology, which makes their stove so efficient. I think their patent's like running out, or there's like a 10-year time limit, so that's why you're starting to see some knockoffs for like half the price. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I forget. Are you a Jetboil fan?
Yes, yes, I am. I like how fast it blows water, but we're usually like I'm a fan for bringing like the flash specifically if I'm boiling water for, you know, like groups of four or more. I think you're gonna be saving a lot of weight and fuel efficiency in the long run. Now if I'm by myself or with another person, I feel like it's not the best option. So are you a Jetboil fan?
No.
Okay.
I'm not. I think part of it's the weight and the overall like weight of the system. I think the other thing is I've used the MSR Windburner side by side with the Jetboil, and while the Windburner looks very similar, it has a different heating element that also uses radiative heat as well as like the flame heat, and I find it just works a lot better. It boils faster and then works better in wind compared to the Jetboil system, which kind of just has like a traditional burner underneath the stove and then the fins and everything like that. So it's kind of like a next, I find the wind burner to be like a next level technology for, I think it's less priced than the jet boil flat.
Okay. I don't think I've used that one. So I'll have to check that one out. Okay.
Yeah. Check it out. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts as like a, you can use mine on the trip in a couple weeks if you want. Test it out. Do a side by side.
Ooh, that means I have to trust you to bring the stove and remember to bring the stove. I think you're pretty trustworthy. Okay.
I'm pretty trustworthy.
Okay. I've run into issues where like, oh, did you bring such and such like it says to bring on the gear list? Oh, ooh, no. Like, all right, well, that's a problem. Anyway, so yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk about that. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I'm not the one you need to worry about that. You can ask my wife. I'm the one that like is checking the list, double checking the list, and bringing all the things that are needed.
Yeah, I just haven't gone with you. And to be honest, like the guys I go with, there's like at least half of them are typically irresponsible and they're forgetting something. So I mean, like my good buddy that I've gone with, there was one trip where he's like, "Ooh, I forgot my spoon," and then I was like, "All right, like I'll eat first. You can use my spoon because I don't know. I probably should have said no." And then, like, the very next trip, he's like, ooh, I forgot my spoon again. I was like, dude, how do you miss two trips in a row? It was literally weeks apart. And so, and what I learned from that, honestly, is that people really don't forget their spoons. They just put it in a weird spot, and it's like a small item. They misplace it, so.
Oh, okay. So it's in their pack. It's just not, they just don't know where it is.
Because it was, like, the next trip, but, like, I brought my son, and he's young. And he's like, I'm like, I know you packed your spoon. Like, I helped you pack your backpack, so we just had to find it.
Yeah. Yeah, I use like I think I mentioned on the podcast before, but I'm developing website packwizard.com, which is kind of like a lighter pack, and it has a pack creation tool. But something we added in was you can convert it to a checklist, any of your pack lists. So then, as you're packing, you can just go through and like check off the boxes, or you can print it off and bring it with you to double check. And I use that a lot. I have like a generic one. I'll post a link in the show notes that just. If people want to check that, you can use the same one. It's just like spoon,
mm-hmm.
like tent. What else do I bring back?
Utensil, yeah, yeah, and everything else. I actually did check that out. Yeah, I don't think it has everything that I would put on my gear list though. So I think that because I don't know, for our podcast we do like a trivia at the end of each show, and we have like a punishment by the time the trip rolls around. So for example, my buddy Derek, my co-host, he's got to bring garbage pail kids. So that's probably not on Pack Wizards.
It's not, but you can duplicate other people's lists. You could duplicate mine and then just add your own stuff onto it.
But it won't tell me the weight of like a package of those, right?
No, probably not. Or yeah, or like a raw potato, and you have to add like the custom weight of whatever rock you put in there.
It's fair enough.
I think that'd be, have you guys done a baked potato punishment where someone has to carry and make baked potatoes for everyone?
No, that's a good one though.
Because that's like a double punishment. You have to carry the potatoes in, then you have to spend like 3 hours.
Yeah, with a campfire. Right. That's a really good one. And you get the aluminum foil and all that stuff. Yeah, okay. I like that one. All right, I'll check in with you before we do punishments for trivia again.
That's almost torture. I don't know if that's taking it too far at that point.
We've done some ridiculous things like that, so yeah, for sure.
Before I jump into the secret ones, what do you have another one for me?
Let's see. Yeah. So there's like smaller companies. I wasn't. I don't know. I'll kind of throw them off real fast. I had like. Like pickle juice was one that's like a 5-hour energy shot where it's just supposed to prevent cramps or like actually like cure your cramps if you have muscle cramps out on the trail, which I actually struggle with. Not always backpacking, more with the running. That's something I'm trying out. Wool-Aid makes these band-aids that are essentially made of wool. And I think that could be a solution for blisters where you want something that's breathable and can kind of slide around your foot. That's yeah, kind of just is different than like your moleskin. But one thing that we tried out on our recent trip, which actually worked, and I was surprised it worked, is there's a company called Lemongrass, which makes an all-natural bug spray with essential oils. And we had mosquitoes on our last trip, and then we had another, like, one of my buddies that went to the show tried it out on one of his trips where there's a lot of mosquitoes, and it actually worked. So, yeah. Those are kind of smaller companies, not really gear necessarily, but just companies that like, had things that I was interested in.
Yeah, That's cool. Yeah, there's a lot. I think like maybe I'll run through some of the new gear that I thought that didn't really like stand out in a huge way, but is coming down the pipe if people are interested. Like Soto's coming out with the new like super ultralight stove set that's made with 2mm titanium. Soto had an interesting thing that I'm not allowed to talk about, but they have some cool stuff coming down the pipe. There is Flextail has like a portable ice machine. I don't know if you saw.
I went to Flextail. Yeah. I didn't see the ice machine. They kind of like.
It's like about a foot by a foot by a foot and weighs probably like 15 pounds, but it produces like 9 ice cubes every 5 minutes. So if you want, you could like bring it to the beach and just have ice cubes.
Like you pour the water in and then it just starts making ice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was an interesting one.
They made like a what do you call it? It was like a thermocell type thing, but it was battery operated. Did you see that?
Yeah. I tested that one out. That one worked pretty good. I'm still on the fence about whether like the area bug protection. So I'm just like, what's like I need to look more into like how it affects humans and like food and the chemicals that are in there. Yeah, 'cause I think it's like erythrin or something like that. I'm a little bit on the fence about that. Well, it works. Compradel has some titanium trekking poles that are coming out. We already mentioned the Enlightened Equipment Outcast jacket, which is kind of just like a fancy city jacket. You could bring it backpacking. It's light enough that you could bring it backpacking, but it's more geared towards like city stuff as an insulated jacket. Yeah.
But the Compradel trekking poles, like I go back and forth with trekking poles. Are they... Like, what's the advantage of, like, the carbon fiber ones? Are they stronger, longer lasting, lighter weight? What's the deal?
So with titanium, the way that they're explaining it was titanium kind of slots in between aluminum and carbon fiber as far as weight goes and cost goes, but then they're more durable than both of them. So you get the most durable pole that you can get at a price in between carbon and aluminum and then a weight that's in between carbon.
So are they still, can you get, like, a pair for under a pound?
I think so. I think it was like just under a pound for a pair. Yeah. So it was pretty good. They're interesting. I think the durability aspect for some people will be pretty useful. I know some people who are, especially like if you're on the heavier end of the spectrum, like you can bust up trekking poles like pretty quickly. So titanium ones might be a good solution there. And then the ones that I heard about were from probably the most interesting ones I heard about were from Nemo. And I think one of them I've talked about on my YouTube channel before, and that's the Nemo Tensor Extreme, an 8.5 R value sleeping pad that Nemo is releasing in the fall of 2023. That's really exciting. That's going to be like warm on paper, warmer than X-Therm, and then hopefully more comfortable with the Nemo baffling pattern that they have there. That's going to be a really exciting one. I don't think no one out there that I've tested is kind of keeping up with the X-Therm as far as warmth goes. So
is that going to be like 6 pounds? Like what's that added weight for that?
It's going to be the same weight as the X-Therm. I think the weight for the regular wide is 590 grams. So about, like that's about a pound, a little over a pound. So yeah, pretty lightweight. And then the other one that they're releasing, and I think, this one's I'm almost more excited about just because there's not a lot of competition in this space, and that's they're coming out with a lighter weight chair. So we have the REI FlexLite Air and the Helinox Chair Zero, both around that pound mark. They're coming out with the Moonlight Elite Chair, which is also going to be around that 1 pound mark. But then you also get the kind of lounging feature that their Moonlight chairs have. So you can like, they have like little ratchets on the side and you can loosen them off, lounge way back, tighten them up, and then kind of pull yourself forward if you're like cooking or want some more back support and sitting more upright. So I'm pretty excited for that one. That one is more competition in the chair realm, I think, is always a good thing.
For sure. And I'll say that I've tried a lot of different chairs. The REI one specifically is the worst one for like an ultralight chair in terms of like the angle that you're sitting in. It's just not, yeah, I wouldn't buy that one again.
That's what I found too. For me, the REI FlexLite Air, yeah, not the most comfortable. It does the job though, and it's by far the most affordable. I think it's probably going to still be like half the price because you can get it on sale a little bit more easily than these other ones. So I think it's like ends up being about half the price, if not less, than than a Chair Zero or what the Moonlight Elite's probably going
to
cost.
Right. That being said, if you handed it to me and they're like, here's a free chair, Carl, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not bringing this. So, sorry. I brought on a few strips and I had people make it. They're like, you're sitting at an odd angle. So I'm a taller guy. I don't know if that's part of the issue, but anyway, yeah, not happening.
Yeah. I think I'll be curious to see, because chairs, like gear's getting lighter and lighter. And because of that, a lot more people are bringing chairs because they just have the ability with how light their packs are to bring a couple more luxury items.
Mm-hmm.
And I get some flack sometimes when I talk, like, cause I'm a proponent of like lightweight packs and kind of reducing your weight as much as possible. Then I'll bring a chair and people are like, wait, why are you bringing a chair? Like that's a pound. But
mm-hmm.
like, I feel like chairs are going to start becoming more and more a staple of people's packs, like a pillow at this point. I think pillows are kind of like becoming a staple for most people out there.
The trend that I'm seeing is really interesting because I'll bring some folks that will like really invest in ultralight stuff with the big four items. And then we always do like a pack weigh-in at the trailhead. Like I, you know, have like a luggage scale and we weigh in our packs and my pack is always lighter than theirs. And I'm like, you've spent like thousands of dollars more than me. This does not make any sense. And so what they're doing is what you're suggesting, where it's like they have lighter weight gear. So it affords some luxury items. But then they end up bringing like a lot of luxury items. They kind of overdo it, and then their packs end up being heavy again. So, at some point, there'll be a balance. But I agree, the pillow and the chair are the two that people tend to bring for sure.
Yeah, and I think you got to still like have a limit. Like if you're like, okay, well, my goal for this trip is like 12 pounds based on the mileage. Like that's what I do. I pair the weight of my pack to the difficulty of the trip, as opposed to just being like, I'm going on a trip. I'm just gonna fill my pack until it feels a certain weight.
right. It's all strategy for sure.
Yeah, a lot of strategy. So I also want to ask you about anything that surprised you from the show. We've talked about a couple of things, but before we get into that, you guys were interviewing a bunch of brands at the show on your podcast.
Right.
Kind of talking, getting into some interesting conversations. Were there any people or brands in particular that kind of like were the most surprising or most interesting that you talked to at the show? Any fun anecdotes?
Sort of. Okay, so I got three quickly. So I've got, so I talked to Chris Shabo. He's like the CEO of Enlighten Equipment. And so like, he was great. He was just a fun guy. I should go backpacking with him. He was a lot of fun. But he shared a story. It's kind of interesting where I guess like they, you know, they partner with Darwin on the Trail, and they had given him, what was it? What's their jacket? Like the Toy Shirt jacket or something? I forget. Torrid jacket, sorry. And so he'd worn it for like 5,000 miles on the trail and it held up. It did really well. And so they kept it as like a memento. And I was like, wait a second. So like did you wash it? He's like, no. It's just like sitting in our back room and it just like smells of 5,000 miles of body odor, essentially. So I thought that was interesting. I talked so we interviewed Spot, the satellite beacon company. Garmin, I talked to the publicist. He was unwilling to come on our show because he did not want me to ask him about the future of the satellite beacons. The future is obviously that we're not going to use them anymore because everything's going to be on our phone. It's going to be like a battle of the apps. And so I talked to a guy named David from Spot, and I asked about that, and he kind of dodged the question. So I thought that was interesting. And then we always do like a recap on our show, like after the interviews. And so I was talking to my buddy Derek and I was like, hey, so I offered Spot like five of my best ideas for how to pivot as a company, not being like a, you know, like in the business necessarily, but I'm an ideas guy. So I think I was going to charge him like five Snicker bars or something, but they didn't hit his back. So anyway, so that was interesting. Just I think that there's some confusion about what to do next for companies like Garmin and Spot with the satellite beacon, and I don't think they have an answer yet, to be honest.
I wonder if they're just kind of like just getting ready to roll over and die in like those aspects of their business.
For Garmin, yeah, Garmin will survive, right? They do other things.
They have their watches, and they can pair. Like if they're able to pair well with the apps, then I think. Like, although losing the InReach subscription, like that's a cash cow for them. Probably it's probably very little overhead, and like once you get subscriptions, yeah, like they're gonna even in the meantime, like with Motorola coming out with the Defy satellite communication device at like $5 a month versus the like $12 a month that Garmin charges, it's less than half the price, and the device costs $100. So it's
They're raking us over the coals with their, you know, their subscription pricing, and it's just So I think that the moment there's like a viable alternative, people are gonna just jump to it because I think people are tired of it, and they get you like, you know, if you don't want to do the annual plan, just for signing up, like you've already purchased a device, you bought them, you already committed to them, but just for signing up to go month to month, they charge you $35, and so I was not happy with them, and I was excited to talk to him about that. But companies like Spot, where they're like mainly Satellite Beacon or Zolios, unless they really like, I have my own ideas about how they could pivot, but unless they really do a strong pivot or they're working on that already, like you're right, the whole company might just die.
I think it's gonna be a slow death. Like I look at like Garmin still makes like GPS devices, and most people are not using a GPS device out there, and so I think we're gonna kind of see. Like phones, like I think more people went from like, they went from not using a GPS device at all. They just kind of navigate based on memory, or like they'd have like a paper map or something like that on trail. And to they went from that to their phone. And I think a lot of people are going to go from like having no satellite communication device to their phone as well. It's just going to be that jump. And so, but there still will be people who, especially for businesses, I think, who are sending out employees into remote areas, I think they'll probably still want to have an inReach as an option there. And it might even be like a contingency of their insurance policies and things like that. So it'll be like over the next 10 years, we'll see a slow death of these ones. I think we'll probably see like, so sorry, Zolio, but I feel like you're going to probably drop off first. And then Spot.
Yeah. Unless they could change. They could definitely cheapen like their subscription. You know, they could do some things to make themselves more competitive. But yeah, it looks like it. Somebody who's used some strictly devoted to that. And I don't know if because the device itself might be more powerful than what the phone can provide, maybe like you still get better or more reliable service for a while. I can see the slow death. Sure.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I think half of what I was doing at Outdoor Retailer, I think, was like identifying brands and companies that were going to die in the near future.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Well, who else is dying then?
I also made a bold claim about Outside Magazine and their entire ecosystem. I think they're going to have a slow death.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Who else was out there?
But did you tell them that? Were you like, hey, you're from Outside, better look for another job?
I didn't see anyone from Outside. So if I did, I'd let them know, like, hey, you should probably get into the YouTube game.
Right. That's hilarious.
I think just in general, like you're saying, we saw a lot of freeze-dried meals companies, freeze-dried meal companies. Like it kind of seems like based on the, like we go through like a bunch startup and then like 50% of them don't make it. And,
right.
I think we'll see the same thing. Like we saw a handful at the show, probably I'd be surprised if 50% make it over the next like 3 years kind of thing. It's just such a cutthroat low margin business.
Yeah. There's two that came to the show last year. It was like Trailtopia and some other one that, Trailtopia, I had one of theirs and it wasn't speaking to me. The other one that I tried, they had like little samples out on the table and I was like, this doesn't have any flavor. Like this is zero flavor. Like as if they had added any salt or anything to it. And so, yeah, I agree. I think those companies are going to kind of die off, fortunately for them, but
it's too bad. More freeze-dried meal companies and options, the better. Cause I think food is such an individual thing, but I think that's where they run into the problem too. Like you can't make something that everyone's going to like necessarily, so you're kind of very niched down.
Right.
Were there any big surprises for you at the show other than seeing myself and Steven at the show?
That was just surprising you guys could be there. I don't know how far into the weeds you want me to get on this. I was surprised by like the lack of innovation. I talked to different companies, even just manufacturers. I saw some innovation for sure, but more like people that, like the guy I was talking to that was trying to, you know, license his products. But I was looking for more. And so when there's companies that haven't put out anything new for years and they're still not putting anything out new, like it surprises me that some of these companies are still around. So like, I don't want to pick anybody at the show in particular, There's one I'll pick on because I was just they were at the show last year, but this is an example of what I'm talking about. So, have you ever used a Body Glide? Okay, so I used them early on because they were the only company that made that type of product. And I went and talked to them, and they had like four products, and they were like, we have the yellow one and the blue one, and they're basically the same thing. I'm like, you guys have had this for 20 years. Like, you guys have nothing else? And I feel like there's companies that kind of like rest on their laurels, and they're more playing like defense. They're like, we're just going to kind of like do a better job marketing, but we're not actually going to try anything new. And I think that's becoming more common, not just in outdoor industry, but just in like industries in general. And so that's why I'm more looking at these smaller companies to see what new stuff they have, I suppose. Kind of more of a general thing. And then, this is like kind of the behind the scenes stuff. I was surprised by companies that don't know how to market, and they were not taking advantage of marketing opportunities with people like yourself or people like myself, where I'm like, this is free advertising. And they were just not wanting to either share product information, or they were not wanting to share just like a little sample. Like, there was one nutrition company that had like these little sticks, like a little drink mix. I'm like, oh, I love drink mix. I use it on the show all the time. Like, do you have an extra one of those? Yeah, we can't give that to you. Like, that kind of stuff. Like a little stick of drink mix. Come on.
Yeah, it's like, why are you here? And I think that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's just lack of knowledge and lack of awareness with that stuff. So, yeah. Did you have any surprises?
I think kind of in line with the innovation thing, I think I definitely noticed that a little bit. Like, companies that I've seen the same product for the last, like, 10 years that they're, like, showcasing at this show, it's like, everyone knows what you're selling and what you are. Like, what? Like, it seems kind of like a waste of money. I know one company told me the only reason why they go is just to kind of stay relevant, stay like on people's radar. They like don't really see it as much of a value other than that, which was kind of interesting. Because they are also like,
can you share that name or no?
Probably not. No. Yeah. They're okay. They're one of the cagier companies that probably wouldn't appreciate it. And they have a UFC fighter that they work with, and they might send him after me to beat me up. So you probably know who I'm talking about now.
I don't know you. I don't know. I'm not in the UFC world, so I have no idea. That's funny.
But one company that I was surprised about that is innovating, that I feel like really has in a long time, was Nikwax. Like, for a long time, I feel like Nikwax has just been putting out the same chemical, same formula for the last like 10 years plus, 20 years. And I think this was triggered by REI putting out a mandate saying we are not carrying any products that have PFAS in them anymore. So that just like a chemical that's used a lot in DWR treatment. They're saying they're not, by 2025, they're not carrying any products with that. So Nikwax came out with a PFAS free DWR treatment for like industrial use that companies like Patagonia, Arc'teryx, Outdoor Research can use this DWR treatment that is PFAS free. So they're kind of innovating by necessity, I guess. I think they've just kind of been like, well, we have the best product and it works, so we're not going to innovate. But now that there's a new problem to solve, they innovate it. I think that's where I do appreciate, like, I'd love to see companies doing this on their own. Like REI having a mandate that shouldn't be the driver for innovation. Like, it should be the companies wanting to do better and innovate on their own. And I know that was the same thing with sleeping pad R values. Like, REI and Mountain Equipment Company in Canada here were like, you guys need to create a new R value system and everyone needs to adhere to it, or we're not carrying your sleeping pads anymore. It wasn't the industry necessarily like wanting to do this on their own, because it limits their marketing capabilities. So that's my little rant.
No, it's impressive you talked to Nikwax, because I saw them. They had a pretty big stand there and I was like, that's just the same thing. So I didn't even want to go over there and talk to them. Like, they've had the same product forever, but apparently not. So kudos to you.
Yeah. So from the DWR journey, like, we went from the C8 DWR, which was phenomenal, worked great, terrible for the environment. I still have a pair of rain pants that have C8 treatment on them, and they still bead water when it rains, which is insane, like 10 years later. Whereas the C6 one, not quite as effective. Things would wet out. You have to retreat the jacket or the pants every year. So I'm curious to see what the performance is of this PFAS-free, because it doesn't have the chemicals that have been needed in order to create DWR in the past, and how much more often are we have to treat our jackets on a year-to-year basis now? I have a whole plan to get a rain room and like some of these jackets and test them out side by side. Hopefully I can make that happen.
A rain room. Okay. Like, you want to build one, or like you're just going to rent?
I know that Nemo has one. So I'm going to try and convince them to let me stand in their rain room with some jackets. Maybe not me standing them. Maybe they have some mannequins I can borrow or something. I can get some 2x4s and then have those stand in the rain room.
It's a better video if you're there, man. If you're in the rain.
Wait, can you volunteer to come? I need a second person in order to stand in the rain room with
me. Yeah, I would
do that. So.
They're in the Northeast, right?
Northeast, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for sure. Well, can you come? Can you make a plane flight trip out just to stand in the rain, essentially? Inside.
Yeah, inside. You don't even get a good view. You're just like in a glass room. Getting videotaped. Hard sell, that's for sure.
Well, I'm really good at if it's raining out, and even if I'm wearing a waterproof jacket, I'm really good at still getting wet inside the jacket. So I'd probably be a good test subject.
Perfect. That's awesome.
That's, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to a couple weeks from now, Carl, where we get to go on a trip together and chat a bit more in person, and really looking forward. Now we're heading out to the Canadian Rockies, and yeah, it's going to be a beautiful, the area we're heading to is one of the most beautiful parts of the Canadian Rockies. So
I'm excited too, man. And for people that have just been watching Justin or listening to his podcast, like behind the scenes, like Justin is a great guy. So much fun to talk to. Just very genuine. And I'm super excited to hang out with you, man. I'm so glad you're going.
Definitely. Thank you. I appreciate it. And if people are looking to check out the Backpacking Blizzards podcast, Where should they go?
Oh yeah, thanks. We got weekly episodes coming out. We're also on YouTube, but we're mainly like 99.9% of our audience is on the audio app. So any audio app, your favorite audio app has our show. And like I said, we're tips and tales with a sense of humor. So we throw a lot of nonsense out there and have a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, and I'll post some links in the show notes so people can go check that out, or the video description if they're watching on YouTube. If they liked your face, they should definitely just keep checking out the YouTube channel, if that's what they're into. Oh, there's some people out there who are like, that's a face I want to watch more of. So
I don't have the beard, so I got to work on that myself.
Yeah, you're changing it up, giving people something a little bit different.
That's true. That's a good point, Justin. Hey man, I really appreciate you having me on the show. This is so much fun. Love talking to you.
Great. Yeah, thanks a lot, Carl. We'll talk to you soon.